Good morning, this is Paul Ingram of PainScience.com. It is Thursday, April 13th, and this is your audio version of today's post, 3 Neat Disc and Herniation Studies. Lately, I have been buried in the science of intervertebral discs, their herniation hijinks, and sciatica. This is inspired by Tom Jessen's excellent work on this topic. For instance, see this terrific reading for prose linked in the web version of the post, of course. What do we actually know about herniations and radicular pain? I learned quite a lot from Tom in that post. I learned so much that I thought there's probably more. I haven't done a deep dive in this topic in many years, so it's time for some knowledge upgrading. And I've been meaning to tell you about some of the several dozen papers that I've been reading, but how to choose? I've got 150 relevant papers or so in the PainSci bibliography, half of them added within the last month. It's overwhelming. I narrowed it down by picking 3 that were published in the last year or so, fresh science. Although I think it's interesting to note that some of the older studies going back to the 70s and 80s, and a couple even older, really good. Some good old science that would not probably happen today. Science has changed a lot, so maybe next time I'll choose old interesting studies. Today, though, it's fresh science. We've got 3. The one about how intervertebral discs can be trained, the one about bacteria in discs, and the one about prolapse size and position not mattering much or at all. First up, a review of the mechanobiology of the disc, mostly just affirming that it does react to loading. Ruffilli et al. Is a comprehensive review of how human intervertebral discs respond to mechanical stimuli, also known as exercise, squishing, flexing, etc., with the main takeaway being that, yep, they do respond. The truth is complicated, and we still have a lot to learn, but they do respond. This isn't necessarily obvious. You might have thought so, but it isn't necessarily obvious, because discs are pretty gristly, and there's still a prevalent old-school view that all they really do is just slowly get junky and degrade, and, like knee cartilage. You know, we think of knee cartilage as something that only falls apart a little bit more every year, and it's pretty common to think of the discs that way as well. But this review makes it clear that it's probably mostly safe to assume that mechanical loading affects discs in the same general way that it affects most tissues. It does best with a just right amount of stimulation and gets into trouble with too much or too little. For instance, quote, moderate mechanical loading may be important in preventing disc matrix degradation, and therefore, quote, moderate exercise may have a protective role against disc degeneration. Actually, that quote says moderate exercise may be have a protective role. I've noticed that the number of typos in scientific abstracts has really gone up in the last few years. And that's probably not an introduced typo. Probably I copied and pasted that one straight out of the abstract. So what that was saying was that loading for a disc that's already degenerating might not be awesome. It might have detrimental consequences, which isn't, you know, that's to be expected. If tissue's already in some kind of trouble, then it's probably less load tolerant and you have to be a little more careful with it. Duh. Despite the profusion of back pain and spinal research in general, this review reports on surprisingly little useful research to date on this subtopic, which is it's a bit surprising. Just 15 papers since 1990 that met the reviewer's standards, one every couple of years. You'd think there'd be more on how intervertebral discs respond to exercise. Number 2. There's lots of intriguing evidence about bacterial infection in intervertebral discs, but we can't do much with it yet. So, can a disc be infected? This possibility has been raised by a bunch of small studies over the last 10 or 15 years, I think. Granville-Smith et al. Is the first good review of all of those. It's good, but it's very technical. Most readers will want to stick to this simple summary. So the review concluded that it is possible that low-grade infection of intervertebral discs with C. acnes might be a cause of their downfall, degeneration over the years, and so therefore also eventually some pain. The reviewer stuck to papers about patients who had undergone surgery, the better to shed light on the question of whether C. acnes was introduced by the surgery, contamination, or if it was present in the disc before surgery. The C. acnes bacteria has definitely been found in degenerating intervertebral discs. There's no doubt about that. And contamination probably can't explain all of it. However, much uncertainty remains, and specifically, culturing bias might be muddying the waters. That is, it might seem like C. acnes is a culprit, when the reality is, or could be, that it's just one of many bacteria that normally colonize discs, and it was only found because we looked for it, not because it's a meaningful infection. All this is worth more study, but so far, quote, insufficient evidence exists to suggest changes to current clinical treatment. In other words, it's intriguing, there's maybe something going on, but it's uncertain, and it is just not ready for clinical prime time yet. No injections of antibiotics into discs, please. Number three, near zero correlation between symptoms and size and position of disc prolapse. Does it matter what direction an intervertebral disc bulges, or how far it sticks out from between vertebra? Well, you'd really think so, wouldn't you? I did. I did, despite reading so many papers over the years about the loosey-goosey links between back pain signs and symptoms. I still thought, but surely the direction and size of herniations is significant, right? I mean, come on. Well, Dunsmuir et al. Checked. They carefully assessed 56 patients with uncomplicated lumbar disc prolapse and found no detectable correlation between symptoms and size and position of the bulge. Technically, the Pearson correlation coefficients were near zero for both pain and disability, which is stat speak for these two things we measured have basically no relationship. PCC numbers range from -1 to +1, -1 being a negative correlation, a perfect negative correlation, inversely, an inverse relationship, and +1 being a perfect positive correlation. And 0 in the middle is no relationship at all, and these numbers were 0.05 and 0.07, so basically 0. Amazing. What does this tell us? Along with a mountain of similar evidence, it tells us what a patient feels matters more than what we see on scans. And back pain is biological, not mechanical. Okay, so there's three out of dozens of papers that I've looked at lately. I might just do this again with another three that I pick by some other criteria. We'll see. Or I'll just dive into rewriting the herniation chapter of my back pain book and share that with members and back pain book customers when it's ready. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next time.